Working Class Audio is made possible by the support of Cali Audio, DistroKid, Sampley Audio, Audio Technica, Gearspace, and Grace Design.
This is the Working Class Audio Podcast, session 286.
Working Class Audio, navigating the world of recording with a working class perspective. Here is your host, Matt Boudreau.
Thanks, Chuck. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Working Class Audio Podcast. This is session 286 you're listening to. My guest today is Colin Brooks, who is a sound mixer in Royal Oak, Michigan, working on television and film as a dialogue editor, a re-recording mixer, sound designer, sound editor, sound effects editor, sound mixer. And we have a great discussion about all things audio in the world of film and post-production. So, Colin Brooks, coming up here on the Working Class Audio Podcast. Grab your coffee cups, friends. Let's talk about the many disciplines of audio. There are so many possibilities for someone who's interested in audio. I think many times the first thing that a lot of people think of when they think of audio, they think of music, and therefore one might think that that's the only path to take. It's certainly a great path. I've enjoyed it quite a bit. It satisfies me. It really is enjoyable. I enjoy the process of working with music. And as I get older and I start to, you know, reshape my world and my habits around my personal life more, I realize that mixing and mastering is really an enjoyable path. But there, as we know, through the many interviews I've done, there's so many different areas. Some of the interviews I've done over the years have really highlighted those areas to me. Jessica Thompson, in particular, I have to say, really was an inspirational interview for me because of just her passion towards archiving and restoring audio. And my interview with all the different folks involved in film and post-production show, of course, that, you know, you can be on set capturing sound, or you can be in the studio on the post-production end of it, prepping the sound for a film or a commercial. And that within itself has so much possibilities. Sound design, Foley, re-recording mixing, et cetera, et cetera. There's somebody I follow on LinkedIn who seems to really have some great stuff going on. And I'm talking about George Vlad. George, if you're listening, I think what you're up to is really super cool. George is a sound recordist, but he's also a photographer and an expedition leader, and he's really into wildlife and conservation, and his audio desires really take him around the world. He's always posting about capturing various sounds in the environment, and I see that, and I just think, man, that is so cool. That's something I'd love to do. There's, of course, game sound. There's podcasting. There's audio forensics. All these different things that are out there are really interesting to me. The temptation to dabble in all of them, of course, is strong just because of my interest. And I think sometimes for me, what I have to recognize is the things that may be a hobby to dabble in. In other words, you could be an audio professional and have your wheelhouse that you're, you know, something you're really strong in that you identify with. But then why couldn't you have a hobby in another area of audio? Yeah, you could. And that's the beauty of it. And if over time you discover that dabbling means more to you than just being a hobby, then you start to figure out whether or not you really want to turn it into a career change within the audio world. As you'll hear me talk about with Colin Brooks in my interview, is the transition from studio rat, audio engineer, music engineer, to post-production engineer, and bridging that gap, trying to figure out how the language changes subtly. That's an interesting thing to me. We can all be in audio, but within our respective fields of music versus film, the language is different. It's not a perfect matchup. So what we may call mixing a record, mixing a film is not called mixing a film. It's re-recording mixing. And yes, it is mixing, but you're mixing vastly different elements. No matter what you decide to get into, or no matter what you're in now, audio, as we all know, is such a rewarding thing on so many levels. Aside from the business and the money part of it, just the art of sound is just beautiful. And Colin mentioned to me at the end of the interview this movie that you have to check out, and I'll include a link in the show notes, a film called Making Waves. It's all about film sound and really gets into the pioneers of the techniques and the ideas that are in use today in the world of post-production. So be sure and check that out. I've already watched it. I'm ready to watch it again. It's just so fascinating to me. If you're in post-production or film sound, you'll love it. If you're in one of the other disciplines, I think you'll love it as well. And to those of us who do work in some form of audio as a job, we're very lucky. I feel very fortunate to be able to work in audio as I do. So that's it. Cheers to audio. And no matter what discipline you're in, I salute you. Thanks for listening. Most of you already know about Grace Design and have known about them for years. They've been around since 1994. It was started by the two brothers, Michael and Eben Grace, who still run the company to this day. And you already know that they make incredible sounding products for us all. What you might not know, if you don't know them, is that Michael and Eben are two of the nicest people on the planet. Easily approachable, very knowledgeable. You might have met them at a trade show and experienced this. Without a doubt, it's one of my favorite companies out there in the world of pro audio. You might have heard me a few times talking about the Grace 908 Atmos controller. I think the most elegant solution, if you're going to be doing Atmos, that is the best solution out there, as far as I'm concerned, hands down. And prior to that, I was using the Stereo 905 controller for many years. Not only that, but most recently, I have used their 108 mic pres to do the Room 219 combo jazz record that you might have heard me talk about. The point is that they check all the boxes for me. They're incredibly nice people. They make incredibly great products. They're located here in the United States in Lyons, Colorado, and employ a number of people. They're the epitome of a small business here in the US, and I just love that whole thing. So if you are in the market for mic preamps or instrument preamps or monitor controllers, this is the company to check out, hands down. If you don't know about them, go to gracedesign.com, check them out. And if you're in the market for any of those products, you absolutely have to consider what they offer, because what they offer is superior build quality and sound quality. And those of you who bought their products in the 90s that are still using them, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So check them out, gracedesign.com. I know the business of audio is a frustrating one sometimes. The audio part's pretty fun, but it's the business of it and the career part of it that's a little challenging to many of us. I can completely empathize with that. And if you thought to yourself, God, I wish I could talk to somebody about this, you can do that. You can talk with me about it. As a matter of fact, you can book me for a coaching and consulting call over Zoom very simply. Just head on over to workingclassaudio.com. If you click on the menu button at the top of the menu, there is a link that says Coaching and Consulting with Matt. Super simple. Click on the link, book me in for an hour on a Zoom call, and we will discuss your particular situation, and I will help you get refocused, re-inspired, and figure out what is the best path forward for you. If your situation requires a little more extensive conversation, we can absolutely book a series of calls. And like I say, get you focused and get you moving forward. I've been there, and when you don't have anybody to talk to about it, it's a little frustrating. So head on over to workingclassaudio.com, click on the menu button, and book yourself in for a Zoom call with me. And we could sit down and chat, coffee's in hand, ready to tackle the business of audio together. That's it. Let's get to it. Colin Brooks, here on the Working Class Audio Podcast. Colin, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here today and sitting down to chat with me.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So I've been following you on LinkedIn for a while, and everything you post, I seem to always like. I like the things you post about business, about life, about hard work, work ethic, just everything you post. I'm like, yeah, this guy and I see eye to eye on a lot of stuff. So it was only a matter of time before I inevitably asked you to come on the show, especially because you seem to work more in the area of audio for film or pictures. I guess I should say, not just film, but you seem to work in that area, which is an area that I know very little about. My area is music. So those are some of the driving factors of me asking you to come on the show. So if you could, for the audience, tell us about right now, what is your job now? What do you do day to day?
The day to day activity for me is pretty much working with sound design for a lot of indie films. And most of the work, most recently, over the last year, has been cleaning up a lot of dialogue, adding sound effects, and re-record mixing for the indie films. They will release these films in local theaters and regional theaters. So I would have to do a 5.1 mix or a 7.1 mix for the indie films. And I had to scale it back with what we call a fold down into a 2.0 stereo mix for broadcast, either through Netflix or Amazon. Outside of that, where I am currently, over the last, I'm not sure if you've seen me post some things over the last 3 years, from an art background in high school and junior high, my artistic side has seemed to creep up for doing motion graphics and adding those sound effects to the motion graphics. One of the films I was working on, a person, he hired a company to do some motion graphics, but I ended up doing the sound for the actual imagery. And they couldn't really capture the exact sound effect he was looking for. So that made me rethink how I look at sound. And it took me to a transformation to, I guess the best way I explain it to a couple of engineers, other folks, is I see what I hear and I hear what I see. In a video, if I see you reach for the doorknob and you turn the doorknob, but your camera's focused on them grabbing the doorknob, turning the doorknob, opening the door, naturally we would hear that, even though we would typically ignore it because this is just a sound we hear and see every day. But on film, the camera's focused on that one moment when that person's reaching, turning the doorknob, and you see their hand reach out, extend, they're turning the doorknob and opening the door, and you hear nothing, it doesn't seem real. So I'm the guy who thinks about those little nuanced things that I guess the average person isn't necessarily thinking of. But when you sit your cup down on the table, like you hear my glass, you hear my cup, let me put my mic here. Those little subtle things like that. If you see the cup come to the glass table, naturally, if you're in the room with them, you will hear that, even though it's little subtle things that made me really pay attention to sound. 2011 is when I did my first full feature film with an indie company. Before that, I was doing engineering since 95 for various different independent artists and mainstream artists. In the later years, through Interscope and Def Jam, worked on a lot of records, or was assistant engineer in the room doing something at some point, either reel to reel to digital, which was an easy transformation for me to walk from reel to reel analog to digital because of, I guess, the nerd in me from understanding computers and gravitating to that. I think my father bought the first home Apple computer. I can't think of the name of it, but getting it to say hello back was the most mind-blowing thing for me in the world. So I adapted the computer so early. So by the time I walked into analog studios in the 90s and had a taste of that, that walked me from there to when Pro Tools was introduced in the mid-90s and the computer was about the size of my desk. I remember the engineer hated Pro Tools and it was easy for me to adopt and understand. So I sort of helped him kind of figure it out. But that brings me back around to today where I'm literally using Cinema 4D to do motion graphics, and then my sound background for sound to film was easy for me to adapt. It's like I have all these combined pieces of me that make me not just an engineer, but it makes me a creative in the world of audio, but also in the world of visual as well. So I have a gamut of things that I can talk about what could go another hour just talking about just how I stepped into the 3D realm of creating things from music to sound and sound to motion graphics and then back to sound, but still applying myself to understand how to mix music, which in turn is bled over to sound mixing for balancing out dialogue, sound effects, because you have dialogue, sound effects, and music. Those are your three elements generally inside of a film or television show or document. I know I'm all over the place, but maybe I need...
No, that's fine. What I'm curious about is you have this background working on records. Was there a particular event that triggered you to want to come over to the world of motion picture sound?
I saw a documentary of George Lucas, and I've always been a Star Wars fan. I was in San Francisco with my parents. No, I'm sorry. We were in Los Angeles. And the premiere, one of the premieres or the premiere going into the weekend, we happened to be out there. And you may see me out there in a crowd of folks, depending on what day they shot, the large grouping of people coming to see this film. That was the beginning of me seeing film and then hearing it and hearing what I'm seeing. Films prior to that may have just, I guess, cartoons or films may have just been something to see, not necessarily hear and feel, should I say it in that aspect. Later on, what took me from mixing records, recording, because my background was recording punk bands, rock bands, alternative music is what brought me into the engineering world. I didn't start recording hip hop artists until the late 2000s. In the 90s, I was recording those. Prior to that, I was recording bands, opera singers, and so forth because of the type of studio. It was analog. And obviously, you know, analog tape is not cheap or was not cheap then either.
It still isn't cheap.
Well, yeah, true. So what walked me from there to digital, and then I was recording artists, I saw The Matrix. I was probably one of the few people who saw Matrix late, not when it initially came. I saw it at the dollar show or something. A friend of mine drugged me to see it, and I was like, whatever, okay, fine. Seeing that film and the mix, hearing it, seeing it, totally changed my whole perception of how you make a film and seeing what you're hearing. The sounds they use and created for that film made me go back to Lucasfilms and then really pay attention to how and what he did. Because you kind of feel the action and the action, the music, the orchestra, the mix, then the lasers and the lasers shooting past your ear, either coming towards you or coming past you, and then hear those laser blasts, the ships flying by, and the Millennial Falcon and those X-Wing fighters, that distinct sound. I really, really paid attention to how they made those sounds out of nothing. And that's what made me really come down and say, okay, I'm going to get serious about dealing and doing picture to sound. Even though I didn't really get to work on a film until 2011. But I was doing small little things. I think I did a commercial for someone. A guy messed the commercial up. So what I did was I took their video and chopped their video up to where the music was there and synced the video up to the music. I did it in reverse. And had the characters come in and out along the beat of the video. And that video stayed online. It was on YouTube for a couple of years locally. And one of the guys who was there ended up going working for Paramount Pictures doing something, I guess, years later. And then my name kept dropping out because of that idea for those guys. 8 years later, these guys approached me to do their film. And I was terrified. Because I was like, I've never done a film. I didn't tell them that, but I said, well, just like anything else, and most engineers like yourself probably understand, you won't know until you do it. You will not know your mistakes until you make them. And at least you can say you tried as opposed to shoulda, woulda, coulda. So I jumped in with 2 feet, had Pro Tools. I was in a studio in Oak Park that is now defunct, but Oak Park, Michigan here. With Interscope, I was in the middle of working on their film at the same time working on the Slaughterhouse album for Eminem for Aftermath and Shady Records at the same time working on their film. Yes, literally, I would work on their film in the morning and try to get some sleep in between before our session started with Eminem and Slaughterhouse will come in. Keep in mind, we're in the studio all night long because I know you know. We're in the studio at 6 waiting on them. They don't show up till like, I think they left Eminem's studio at 9 or 10. They'll come to us and we'll do some more either playing records or recordings that they did at M Studio or other new songs at our studio all the way up until 3, 4 until I guess they're tired. I'm tired. I would try to get some sleep, run home, get some sleep because I didn't stay too far away from the studio. Wake up early, about 9 o'clock in the morning, shoot back to the studio just to keep working on their film in increments. And this was a film, it was very dark. It was like a gangster type of film. So it was a lot of shooting. So I had to mix the gunshots. I had to find the right guns, clean up the dialogue, the music they used, either I had to replace it or clean it up to And this is almost a 2-hour film. At the same time, recording Slaughterhouse. I have no idea how I pulled that out. I have no idea how I pulled through it. And when I finally got into the final mix where I had to set up everything for a 5.1, we had an additional set of speakers. I had to sit them on the desk that was between our console and then the desk behind us. I had to sit the monitors on the desk, prop books up just so that they're ear level, and then kind of turn them. So I have a 5.1 field. Do that for a few hours before they came in. This is during the final mix. So I had to come up with all these creative ways of, or your non-standard way of doing a mix, just to get the mix done, tear that down, repatch everything. So that way I'm ready to start recording various different artists and do that for the remainder of the evening. So 2001, I can say I hang my hat on that nail to say I'm glad I jumped in 125%. To say, yes, I want to do television and film and audio for post. That when I made that decision then, I knew, okay, this is the direction I'm going. Hmm. That one moment right there, it was very trying.
Burning the candle at both ends.
Yes. And still to this day, I just thinking about it at this moment, the mayhem for a year and still pulled off the mix. And let's see, I started in January with them. I was already in the middle of recording Slaughterhouse. So January of 2012, the film premiered in mid-April. They played it, the test in the theater. I was terrified it play that I was either going to lose my sub in the room or it was too bright. I was terrified because I had to re-record so many rough mixes just to get the blend right in our room. Because of how I had to use the two monitors behind me for my LS and RS in the behind me. My center was perfect. The only thing I think I've lost from that first film in that theater, and once I heard the test mix, was for some strange reason, because I guess how our room was set up, I was losing the dialogue at certain points when the frequency would push up during, it was a certain scene. And they kept walking into this room. I don't know if it's how they recorded and how I was hearing it in our room. The dialogue would dip below the music. I couldn't understand how or why. I think the next film I worked on, I figured that out. But the alternative, what I did was just doubled up their dialogue right in that section of the film and then pushed them through the right and left channel just for those two scenes. It was these two rooms. I don't know what it was about those rooms, but I had to figure it out on the fly. Hmm. And just like dealing with music and dealing with recording artists or recording a band, sometimes analog tape isn't 100%. Pro Tools isn't either. And you have to go back into these files to find where is this missing piece of audio or what happened. So you have to either overcompress it just to pull it up or add an EQ or whatever it may be just to fix that moment. By the time they released the film and people came to see it, everyone loved the film. No one noticed it. I noticed it. And the director was like, well, they seem to be fine with me. There's nothing I can say. But they called me back for the next film. And I've been working with them since. And it has blossomed to work on several other films with other directors, other indie films since. And they've always been the ones that I looked at like, well, you guys are the ones who birthed me. I'm a monster because of you. And my work ethic has always been there. But if it wasn't for them trusting me and not knowing that this was all new for me to jump in 125%. I've never looked back. I've let music go on the industry side of music. I think by the third film, I stopped doing recordings with Interscope. I still have my ties with them, but I've moved 100% in this direction. I haven't looked back since.
I have to ask you, you're located in Royal Oak, Michigan. Mm-hmm. How do you find getting work like this in a city or a state that isn't necessarily in a primary market? Like typically people think film, they think Los Angeles. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, because of COVID, I think that may change. But prior to that, I was already working remotely. Most of my work is indie. So I guess it depends on your relationships because they're not necessarily following the studio. They're following the engineer. Then they're also following the personality. I'm very comfortable having conversations with the director. I'm comfortable working with the music supervisor virtually and or in person. With the advent of technology now, it doesn't make it so much of a problem. I guess the biggest hindrance is if the production company is in another state, you can't just drive down the street to go settle a problem. You have to get on the phone, set up a Zoom, like moments like today. I'll either have to pull up everything and go to the secondary studio that we deal with to do any work, and then I have to pull up a Zoom. It just makes it a little harder because those handshakes, the introduction to folks, and sitting in a room and feeling their energy while you're either editing a film in real time, you lose that. But it just depends on, I guess, the person or the team that you're working with. Some, I have to be in the room. Matter of fact, it's the film that I have coming. He has to be in the room.
It just makes for a better workflow?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes it's a distraction. And I'm pretty sure you're aware of some people just think that it's just...
Yes.
Wow. Well, why is it doing that? Well, can you want to go get some coffee? You know, I'll
can you go?
Yeah. Instead of just telling them just leave the room, I'll try to appease. But some people just, their questions override the work or the secondary conversation. I wish I was sitting in a room now. I can show it to you. I have this picture in a frame that I saw years ago where you see it's like a level of energy when you go into a studio. 9 p.m., it's here. 10, 12. By 3 a.m., it's on the floor, and you see the subtitle, Extra Conversation, Non-Productive, Productivity Gone. So you have a level of energy that just falls off when you have others in the room, especially others whom come into the room or do not understand this side of post. They're, well, why does it sound like that now? Well, we haven't done anything. You know, there's those questions where now I'm stopping in the middle of either doing an edit or I have something in a loop. And I tend to have things in a loop. Say, for instance, I have a scene where, you know, this director that I've dealt with him on his last film, he likes to ask questions while you're having the audio go in a loop as you're just doing these tweaks and adjusting of EQ or compression. And I'm trying to hear those pops or those nuances in the dialogue. I'm trying to clean it up or get the balance, because his dialogue, this character's dialogue needs to sound the same as he did four scenes prior back. He likes to have a conversation about, so how about those tigers? Those moments, they play depending on the director, depending on the producer, depending on, like I said, anyone that's dealing with either on the post side or from the production side that necessarily doesn't sit in the room, or the editor. I've had some editors, they understand. Sometimes you just want to be left alone. Let me just go ahead and do my creativity or let the creativity pour out instead of having those extra curricular conversations that may not pertain to what we're trying to do right now. So then you stop me, you're having these side conversations. Those are the pros and cons of when you're in the room with someone and in the same location, or should I say the area, versus someone that's remoting in and you just send them the file. Like, because I use Frame.io to send the work up so they can look at it at their own time on their phone, their iPad, on their computer, and then make reference notes. And I see that type of production moves things a lot faster as opposed to when I'm sitting in a room with them. And that 1 hour turns into 3 hours because we talked for an hour, even though it may have been increments of 15 minutes here, 10 minutes here, or they're asked, hey, you want something? I'm about to go get something to eat. So now you're stopping to look at a menu to go try to figure out, because now you're hungry because you wasn't thinking about food, because in your mind, I want to get done.
Yeah.
Or that creative energy is pouring onto the page and they come in like you're painting your canvas and a bird just stops and lands right in the middle of your picture. Like, what are you doing? That's the vibe that I have with people sometimes is I try to figure out ways that, are you hungry? I think, let me see if I get one of our interns or the secondary engineer. He can give you a menu out there. You guys can, you know, go to the menu or try to figure out ways to get them out of the room. Those type of people, I try to slowly move them out of the room, or they may have the phone ringing all the time and they don't put it on mute while you're trying to hear these small little increment sounds and you're trying to fix things. So
yeah,
it's a pro and a con when it comes to people in the same city. Like LA, I love Los Angeles. All your post houses in Los Angeles and a couple in San Francisco, and then between those two cities and in New York, which I've never been in New York, ironically.
Like ever?
I've never been to New York, but I work with a lot of folks from New York.
Oh.
And I can't explain why.
Yeah, but you got to go to New York sometime. Great city.
Honestly, I was supposed to go to NAMM in Los Angeles. And then I was on a TV show, so I couldn't go to NAMM. Then I was supposed to go to AES event in New York this year. That's scrapped.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Because of the COVID. So the year that I'm ready to go, because of the post-production has really pushed me to reach out and touch other folks more than music has, especially the most recent years. And then my relationships with, I think it's Indie Films, this actual company that has most of the films up on Amazon. My relationship with them has blossomed because of this one individual's film I worked on, the director. I'm being tied into these events, so I haven't gotten the opportunity to go to New York. So now when we plan to go to New York, no, I can't go because of this mess. But
yeah,
I think that being in Detroit is very, very hard for major film work, because I think the situation with the governor at the time rescinded the Film Production Act for the state of Michigan.
Was that a tax break thing?
Yeah, he didn't want it or didn't understand.
Okay.
And honestly, there was a couple production companies that was setting foot building construction. One was in Farmington Hills, and one was in Livonia, and the other one was in Novi. That building's still sitting out there in Novi to this day. It's empty, I think.
Interesting.
But they was moving that fast, and he shut that down. And it would have been great, because I don't know if you've been to Michigan, but—
My wife's from there, so we're in Michigan every year.
Okay, so you know we have just about everything you want to do. We have the Great Lakes. We have the Upper Peninsula. We have, well, downtown Detroit. If you've been there most recently, is totally night and day. Then we got Canada is literally right here across the water, either going to bridge or the tunnel. Or if you have a boat yourself, you get on the boat and go over to Canada. We have so many things to where you can shoot all types of films here. And he shut that down. Because they was looking at Michigan as we have everything. And we're right across. Chicago's right there.
Yeah.
5 hours away from Detroit. And Chicago has a very blossoming post-production world. And over the last 4 years, I don't know if you're aware of that. It's a lot of production going on in Chicago.
Well, plus cost of living in Michigan as opposed to the coasts is just unbelievably so much better.
Yeah.
I have a question. In my understanding of post-production roles, sound editors, sound designers, re-recording mixers, dialogue editors. It seems that in like a town like Los Angeles, my understanding is a lot of those roles are segmented into as individuals doing a lot of those roles. Whereas it seems like maybe in the indie world, guys like you are kind of one-stop shops where you could do it all. Am I wrong about that? Or are those jobs segmented more in Los Angeles than they are in other areas?
Yes and no, but it depends on the size of the film,
okay,
the budget on the film. I'm a true believer of the more ears and eyes you have on a project, the better the outcome sometimes. But indie, we are more of a one-stop shop, depending on what is needed, as far as sound is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on the budget. It depends on the director. Sometimes they pick based upon their budgets. Their budget can probably only contain someone who can do pretty much 3, 4, 5 different jobs. But then you have other budgets that are seem to be a little bigger, and they may pick novice editors and get away with getting things done, or they use interns. It's a mixed bag, should I say.
Okay.
A very mixed bag. Even in LA, I find that there are some production or post side, you have 4 or 5 people working on different aspects of a film or a film project.
Hey, our friends over at DistroKid have created the DistroKid app for Android, which allows you to do some key things such as check your stats from Apple and Spotify, edit release metadata, upload new releases, and a host of other features. And remember, WCA listeners get 30% off your first year at DistroKid. And if you just head on over to workingclassaudio.com/WCA30, you can follow the link, get your 30% off, and be off to the races. So check our friends out at DistroKid and make sure and get your 30% off by going to workingclassaudio.com/WCA30. About a year and a half ago, I signed up for Samply.app, And I have to report back and say that I'm completely thrilled with it and it's working out quite well. It gives me the ability to upload mixes and masters to the website and provide a super pro looking interface for my clients. They can drop comments in the timeline. They can listen on any device. They can listen to it in high res. And if I want them to pay for the mix or master before they download it, because of the Stripe integration, I can set that up. There's also Dropbox integration, which allows me to quickly create a folder in my Dropbox, which automatically syncs with Samply, makes it much more simple. You should check it out for yourself, but there's a deal to be had. So use the code WCA20. Go to Samply.app or Samply.app. Use the code WCA20, get 20% off, and you'll be off to the races. It's a fantastic tool that I think you're going to enjoy and will definitely make you look a lot more pro when you're delivering files to clients. Skip that whole business where you send it to them over Dropbox. That looks totally amateur at this point. Use Samply.app and use that code WCA20, and I think you're going to be really thrilled. Samply.app. Check it out.
Did you find that the terminology from what they're called in the world of music as opposed to what they're called in the world of film, was that confusing at all? Like the term mix a record, mix a song essentially is re-recording mixer in the world of film. Was any of that confusing in the beginning?
Yeah, that comes from the individual like myself or anyone. When you're walking into uncharted territory, you tend to want to tap the shoulder of those whom will give you the dialogue of the land. And there are terms that do not cross platform. Most people have in their head, mix is a mix. Now you have a sound mixer. Then sound mixer at the top is like an umbrella. And then you have all these pieces that fall under. That's like you have a recording engineer for records, but then you have recording engineer is an umbrella for all these other types of engineers as well. My early years, I was still saying record vocals, 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 until someone had to stop me. I think by the third film, no, it's called dialogue. I think I actually met a guy who he was very seasoned and he seen where I was going and he pulled me to the side and said, here, let me give you this chart. Because you're still in between the two and you have your terms that do cross over and then you have terms that do not. Then you have some that sort of are that borderline depending on what you're doing within a project. But yeah, it is a language barrier at times, especially when you're dealing with new producers or new directors whom I don't want to tear someone down, but either they're not taking the time to learn the post language versus production. There's a different language in post and production as well.
Oh, as far as like if you're on set versus post-production.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to actually learn that as well. And I was many times in emails, I was messing that up.
Let's talk about the business of working in post-production. I have no clue of how the money works. You know, it's like when you do records, that I know how to figure out. How does it work in film? Do people work hourly or do they work by the project or?
Both.
And is it just the Wild West as far as budgets and how you work?
In film, your budgets are bigger as opposed to working on the album. But that depends as well. Indie films, depending if they do their budget correctly, you have production budgets. And some of those people may work per project or they may get paid per day or per hour, depending on what they're doing within that project. And on post side, it's the same process. I've worked on a job where I was just doing dialogue editing and it was just for that day. And it was a documentary. So they hired me for the day to work and clean up all of his dialogue. It was 20 minutes, but they billed me for the day. I think it was a 10-hour day. And the director popped in within 3 hours of the 10-hour day. We were technically done, but it was just some other sprucing up and then sending the files over to New York. And that was it. So it depends on the money aspect. It's based on per project. Like my projects, most of these films, is based per project. But I've had projects where it was per hour or per day, depending. And most of your per day falls within that re-record mix. Generally, a re-record mix, depending on the film, generally a day or two. So you would have maybe 10-hour days, maybe a little less, depending on the booking situation at those particular studios or wherever we may go. It could be per day as well. Or per hour. It's just depending on what needs to be done.
Do you have a particular philosophy about just how to deal with money and saving or not saving? And is it still a work in progress, or you think you got a good grip on it at this point?
Dealing with business and money is always a work in progress. I've learned to be nimble, been here, been there. And I try to explain to a lot of younger engineers, learn your craft. You don't have to spend a lot of money to get recording gear like we came up or however. Now you can use a laptop on Pro Tools. Still understand it, it's still a business one way or the other. If it's post-production, learn your craft, hone your craft. But as you walk along that path, take time to sit down and read or understand business, because your business model still follows a format, regardless if it's a post-production facility, a music recording studio, you're selling clothes out of a shop in a building with a storefront. You still have the foundation of business. You still have to pay your taxes. If you have employees, you should have some sort of payroll set up to pay employees and to be able to hire employees to build your tax structure. I've learned that over the years. Not only am I a business owner, I've taken the time to read books or watch tutorials or talk to folks, and not in my own industry. I've learned to bridge out and speak to other people in business, from bakers to clothes designers to, I got a really strange relationship with a banker. It's just those people will give you information that will help you build your business structure as you build your skills. COVID exposed a lot of friends that I've known over the years whom either did or did not set up a foundation for a business. Like now I've set up a 401k through my company for myself. It's the same thing if you work for Apple. You have a 401k at Apple, you work there for a year, you are become a part of a 401k, and the company will match what you put in to your 401k. Why? You should do the same thing with your business. You should look at your business as a separate entity. Even though you are the business, you still should still look at it as a separate entity, because eventually in time you want to hire folks that's going to move the company along when you retire. The company's, it's like a child. You have to grow it over the years. Just like with your skills, you honed your skills over the years. If you can get both of those parallel and build them along the path as you grow, your business grows along with you, your mindset grows along with you, and then the individuals that are along with you, that come with you, they will grow along with you as well. It's a really strange parallel to build. Some are good at it, some are horrible at it, but I try to just put that out there, or at least tell people directly or indirectly in posts and stuff. Your work ethic tells a lot about you, and doing this is still a business. It's fun. You can make it fun, or you can make it a headache, because I remember the days of working and making $10 an hour working on a song that was horrible versus making $1,000 for that day. And I was in the room 20 minutes. Those lifelong skills of building up that skill set to where you're able to walk into a room and know what you're about to get yourself into. And I'm pretty sure you, as the engineer, you've seen a session and you knew as soon as you heard it what you was going to fix, how long it's going to take, and then you build them accordingly. And they may have thought you did all of these crazy things, but these are things that you've recognized as soon as you walked into the room and heard what was going on for the mix. And you fixed it within 2 or 3 hours or a day, which someone who doesn't take things serious with their business and also with their skills would take them even longer or even lose the gig because they didn't have those skill sets or that business mindset as well to charge them accordingly. And that work ethic, and also most importantly, your mouth can make you lose so many jobs.
Have you lost jobs because of that in the past?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So what would your advice be to others about watching your mouth in situations to not lose gigs?
Knowing when to interject yourself, especially in the studio, knowing when to interject yourself in conversations and knowing when not to. Being an engineer, you hear a lot of things from indie artists to your high profile, multi-million dollar artists and producers. There are a lot of conversations in that room should not leave that room. That's where the politics come into play as well. Sometimes you can hear it. Know when to interject yourself and know when just to just stay silent and just keep working. You have to, because I've seen many artists or producers and engineers get blackballed because they talk too much. I think we lost at that studio at the time 3 engineers talking about what was said in that room. just mind your business. Just keep your eyes on Pro Tools in front of you. If they want to stop and have those conversations, you can kind of turn your chair around and listen, or just stay focused and just keep editing something if you have to find something to edit. Sometimes it's just knowing when to interject and knowing when not to.
When you're a post-production person, the methods for getting more work, is it purely word of mouth, or do people have websites? Like, what do you do to get more work?
I used to have a website. I shut that down. A lot of it is most recently word of mouth in LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram, and Twitter. I've built a lot of relationships with Avid, SSL, Adobe, THX, Adobe Labs, and Adobe Cinema. I built a great relationship with them via Twitter.
Okay.
It's really, you have so many different avenues that you can actually apply what your website probably couldn't do. A lot of people like to see you working in real time. I will post me editing something with, most recently, the guys over at Roundhouse Studios kept harping on me not using Isotope over the years. So January, I kept dancing around using it. This is part of the advertising piece of it. I shied away from it because I guess I got settled and with SSL and Waves, bundles and so forth. So I would always say things about Waves. This is a part of your advertising. When you're posting things about you're using these particular apps, that brings attention to you as well from other people. A lot of folks I've noticed who are looking for people to work with or hire, which is strange to me, they're looking at what you're using. But for the strange conversation I had with them about Isotope, I said, well, I'm gonna give it a try. It was the best thing and the best decision. It cost me $2,000, but it was the best decision I have made. And I wish I just was not being stubborn. And it made me rethink on how I advertise as well. These little trinkets of moments in life that you start to step back and see how you're talking to people on social media. Because social media today is free. And it's the best way to advertise, folks. You can advertise what films you're working on. You can advertise while you're working on the film within reason. Some things you just can't show. But you can have these idle conversations in IGTV and have these discussions about your editing process. And I ended up getting a TV show through that because I took the time to just purchase the Isotope post-production bundle. And unconsciously, I'm talking about it so much. So I posted a video of me using their dialogue editor, and I was cleaning up the horrible dialogue, and I was giving a before and after and actually visually showing it on IGTV and Instagram. I don't think I put it on LinkedIn. The guy saw me dealing with Isotope in an unusual way because I was still new to it. And he called me up and asked, hey, can you fix this? So I just did a quick demo of fixing it inside of Isotope. Next thing you know, he's sending me the files and giving me my deposit to work on the show. So it depends on how you're adapting to today's way of advertising, because you can have a website. It just depends on how your interactions on social media.
Yeah.
I haven't had a website in 3 years.
Well, I don't know if I would have found you if you just had a website. I found you because of your postings on LinkedIn. So your point is well proven here.
Well, it's where your eyes on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and then everywhere else. Those are your four tops. If your eyeballs are there, if I post my website, what's the chances of you remember my website? Probably little to none.
Yeah, you're right.
Most people do not go into your profile. Most don't. They look at your pictures and then they consistently see you posting this or saying this or talking about this. And then another thing that draws people to you, your personality on it. If you're always posting garbage, you get garbage. You put out garbage, you receive garbage. A smelly house is always going to have rats, right? So if your house is clean, people come over. If you come over, you're comfortable. When you leave, you got a nice house. I like going over there.
Plus, you always post super inspirational things or work things. Or like I said, when we first started talking, you just always post great stuff that I really identify with, which made me look deeper into what you were doing. I was like, yeah, this guy, he should be on the show.
I appreciate that.
Hey, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me and tell me about your world. Post-production sound is a fascinating part of audio for me, so it's great to hear your perspective on it. I'll put links to your social media, LinkedIn, et cetera, in the show notes so others can check you out. And
all right.
Yeah, man. But thank you so much for being here.
Before we go, let me turn you on to this film, which really, as long as I've been doing this, it was an eye-opener. Like I stated, you always learn something new. It's called Making Waves, The Art of Cinematic Sound. It was released late last year. I try to tell folks, if you like sound, take a look at this movie. It will open your eyes to how to hear and see, and see what you're hearing and hear what you're saying.
All right, we'll check that out, and I'll include a link in the show notes for the audience as well. Well, hey, man, it's great to meet you. And when my wife and I can get back out to Michigan, we're actually supposed to go this summer, but I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm going to reach out to you if I come out, because Farmington Hills and Royal Oak are not that far away, and we could totally go and have coffee. Are you up for that?
I am game.
I had you at coffee, didn't I?
But yeah, I'm good for that. That sounds fun.
Awesome.
I would love to have a one-on-one real-time conversation. It's talking about sound. It's not a conversation that never really stops, because it's always evolving.
I know. All right, Colin, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take care.
You as well. Be safe.
You too.
Our friends over at Cali Audio have just introduced the brand new LP-UNF system, which is meant to give you everything you need from a studio monitor in a package that you can basically set up anywhere. And the system is specifically designed for your desk, so no matter how else you're using your desk, reflections from the drivers to the desk to your ears are accounted for, giving you a perfectly clear picture of your mix that you can rely on to translate well. Whether you're putting them on stands behind your desk, on a desk away from walls, on a desk against a wall, on a desk on speaker stands away from the walls, there's a number of configurations, and they have settings on the back to accommodate all of that and more. And if price is a concern, never fear. They're priced at $299. That's right, pretty affordable. Head on over to CaliAudio.com and check out the new LP-UNF.
Colin Brooks here on the Working Class Audio Podcast. Thanks so much for being here with me today. I want to thank everybody that helped out with the show, including Anne-Marie Plo on the editing, Cliff Truesdale on the Working Class Audio theme music, and Mr. Chuck Smith for his magical, magical voice. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Spread the word to all your friends, audio and non-audio. And until next time, take care. Hey, I know many of you are aware of this, but for those of you that aren't aware, Working Class Audio sponsors the forum over at gearspace.com called Audio Life. And quite simply put, it's a place where audio professionals can go to talk with other audio professionals about things other than audio gear, including life hacks, work-life balance, health and hearing loss. You know, if you want to talk with other audio professionals who can identify with what your lifestyle is like, and how it relates to things going on in the world outside of audio, this is a great place to go and check out. So head on over to gearspace.com, check out Audio Life, many of the same topics that we discuss here on the show on gearspace.com. So check that out.